Welcome to Real World Theology, episode 28. We continue our summer movie series with Edge of Tomorrow. Now, this movie didn't do so awesome at the box office, but I believe it's almost universally, for those people who have seen it, liked and enjoyed. So if you hadn't seen it, I would highly encourage you to see it, despite its poor box office numbers. I know it's got Tom Cruise, and some of you don't like Tom Cruise, but it's probably one of the best Tom Cruise movies I've ever seen. It's also got Emily Blunt in it. It's just a truly great sci-fi movie. It's not without its flaws, but I mean, for those of you who want something original and are tired of just sequels and remakes and reproductions of the same idea over and over and over again, this does kind of give you something fresh. Even though it's compared to tons and tons of things, it does give you something fresh. So I highly encourage everyone to see it. On this episode of the show, I am joined by Mark Wingerter. People who have listened to the show know that he's a regular guest. He's a great guy, know him in person, writer, filmmaker, just talented guy. So make sure you follow him. He's always got great stuff to bring to the table. Also, for the first time on the show, Matt Anderson from the Sci-Fi Christian. He is half of that duo over there. If you like anything to do with sci-fi and you want to know how that kind of intersects the Christian realm, they kind of blend all those things together in a fun, enjoyable podcast, and it comes out like all the time. So if you just don't get enough Real World Theology, because we only do this podcast a couple times a month, highly encourage you to go over there and check them out. They usually have one or two podcasts a week that you can check out. But we're talking Edge of Tomorrow. It's a great conversation. We talk time travel, regret, the best way to end a movie. We talk Twitter handles, and we even mention how movie trailers today are giving away the entire movie, and it really bothers us. So, I hope you enjoy. Here it is, episode 28, Edge of Tomorrow and Changing History. Movie theaters are modern-day pulpits. Real-world theology exists to shed a light on the narratives that are shaping our culture, and to encourage viewers to recognize that entertainment is not mindless. What's so crazy, because I felt like every time I turned around there for about 3 months, it seemed like you were on everything, or a part of everything, or talking to, like, everything. And I was like, is he really getting ready to start like six podcasts, or is he really just the most popular person in all of like the Christian podcast nexus?
No, it's no, not at all. I like being on podcasts.
Well, if you're going to start them, I mean, now's the time to start them. It's like, this is the time of podcasting. It is the era.
I know. It's awesome.
It's good. Yeah, it's great.
So well, you can get a good listener base like much quicker now than you used to be able to.
Absolutely.
Oh yeah. I've been really surprised at, just doing this podcast for a year, kind of how much traction it's gotten, especially considering it's a fairly specific niche. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not like we're just talking about like, you know, where faith meets pop culture in general. We're specifically talking about like people have to go see movies to be interested mm-hmm. in this thing. So it's kind of harder to find guests. People just can't come on because they like this one thing that happened. They typically have to have gone seen the movie. Mm-hmm. They typically have to have seen fairly a decent number of movies to talk intelligently about other movies and kind of correlate them. But, I mean, like, how many movies do you go see a year, Matt? Like, are you a movie goer?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I love the experience. I really love going to the theater. My co-host Ben, not Ben Avery, but the other Ben, he hates going to theaters. He much prefers... he has a nicer TV than me, though, so that might make a difference. So he likes the experience of just in his home, not having people bother him. Kind of thing.
You can pause and go to the bathroom.
Yeah, I like going to the theater and being there, like, opening weekend. If there's a movie I really want to see and I don't see it opening weekend, it takes some of the luster away from me, so I almost don't want to see it as much. But, yeah, I go to movies pretty frequently. I basically just any... I don't know. I'm not really good at budgeting, so basically any movie I want to see, I just go. I just got married last August, and so.
That's what I was gonna say. I was like, how does this work? Because I thought you just got married.
Yeah, and so I think I'll have to. We've been talking about doing like budget type stuff more recently, so I'm guessing it might have to cut back a little bit. But for now, I like take days off from work so that I can go to a midnight showing the night before and then sleep in the next day.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah.
I mean, does your wife, is she into seeing like movies as much as you are?
No, she's not. But she goes with me anyway. So I'm trying to get her more into superhero stuff because that's like one of my favorite genres. And mm-hmm. So she's a good sport. Like, she didn't see Captain America, but she did go to Spider-Man.
She chose poorly.
I heard you guys talk about that with Rick. And so, let's see. But she did go to Edge of Tomorrow with me. I'm not sure she'll go to Guardians of the Galaxy.
Really?
Oh, man.
I mean, like, I could understand her not wanting to go see, like Godzilla or, even Amazing Spider-Man. But, yeah. Like, it seems like Guardians of the Galaxy would be fun for anyone, especially who haven't read comics.
Ever since the first trailers came out, I've been trying to show her and, like, kind of whet her appetite, but she just thinks it looks dumb. So I guess we'll just wait and see. I've basically been saying, though, since the beginning, and I have high hopes for it at this point, but I thought it would either be like the worst Marvel movie or one of the best, and I think it's going to be one of the best.
Me too.
Do you guys watch Parks and Rec?
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, that makes a huge difference because I love Andy. He's my favorite character, and so I feel like there's so many Parks and Rec fans are going to go see this for him. I think it will do well.
Yeah, I know he tends to have like a niche, well, almost like a stereotype character he tends to play, but I loved his voice work in the Lego movie.
Oh yeah,
and I loved him in Her as like a little like a just an aside character. Uh-huh. I thought it worked great.
I haven't seen Her yet. It's on my list, but
he's good. Yeah, it's a great movie.
I know it's not a superhero movie, but I thought it was one of the better movies that came out last year.
Well, that's the thing about the Guardians of the Galaxy is that, and you know, I'm not deep in the comics at all. I don't know anything about the Guardians of the Galaxy much. It just looks fun. It looks like a superhero movie that's for people also who don't go to superhero movies, because it just looks like it has all this humor and that anybody can makes it approachable for anybody. And it's just gonna be funny and a superhero movie.
I totally agree, because I am a big comic book fan, and I've never read one Guardians of the Galaxy book, really. I mean, I probably didn't even know they existed. I maybe recognized the name, but before the movie was announced, I didn't know anything about them.
Oh yeah, I mean, and the trailer is so good, and like I haven't read any of it, and I'm not into comics as much as I want to be, but so I haven't heard anything, and I was like, the introduction of these characters is enough to make me want to go see this movie.
Yeah,
it's another one of those times where if I go and they just play the trailer on repeat for like an hour and a half, I'll probably feel like I got my money's worth.
Yeah, yeah. Plus, the girl who ate it is in it from Doctor Who.
Oh yeah, yeah. There you go.
Oh yeah,
she's the bad guy apparently.
Really?
Or one of them, yeah.
I didn't know she was a bad guy.
She's apparently extremely deplorable. She compared herself to Hannibal Lecter.
You talking about Amy Pond?
Yeah, Amy Pond.
Karen Gillan?
She's bald in it. She's a bald blue alien.
She actually shaved her head in real life for that.
Yeah, she did. Yep.
No. See, how could we not want
to
see this
movie? I know. We're already talking about that. We're supposed to be talking about a different movie.
Oh, man. I love this because for the past three episodes, we've basically been doing, like, we're into summer movies now.
Yeah.
And since we're into summer movies, every single, like I said, now, including this one, the past three podcasts, we've always started talking about some completely different podcast or movie.
Yeah.
Like, am I listening to the wrong show? I thought I realize this show probably has a lot of go back and listen to it way later. Yeah. Once you have a chance to watch the movie.
Yep.
So I'm afraid people are going to be like, wait, I'm not listening to the Guardians of the Galaxy one. I really wanted to listen to the Edge of Tomorrow one. Well, Matt, the follow-up question I guess I had that will hopefully get us pseudo on topic.
Yeah.
Is, so you're a movie fan. You're a comic. I know you're a sci-fi fan. You're on the sci-fi Christian. That would be silly to not be. But are you a Tom Cruise fan?
You know what? It's funny. I am a huge Tom Cruise fan.
Yeah.
Like, everybody, most of my friends I go to see movies with are not a fan of him, and I don't get it. I love everything he's in. I saw Oblivion last year. Love that. I've got Jack Reacher at the top of my queue for Netflix. Haven't watched that yet. But historically, big Tom Cruise fan. How about you guys?
Yeah, historically the same. I mean, like, I don't like him as a person at all, but that makes some... That
I
makes,
hate him as a human being.
I mean, I guess I don't personally know him, but, you know, his beliefs and that kind of thing, I don't understand, don't care for. But I've always enjoyed him in movies. Like, so for some people, the personal life ruins the movie for them, but I don't think so. I think he's so good that especially in action movies. I mean, you want to see Tom Cruise in an action movie, and I've always loved him and his kind of intensity in roles, and he gives, you know, 110% to everything, so.
Well, he definitely doesn't look 51.
No, he doesn't at all.
He's like the ageless. Maybe there's some Scientology we need to check out. But, yeah, I don't know, I'm always hot or cold on Tom Cruise. Like, I went to see Oblivion last year, and I liked lots of parts of it.
Mm-hmm.
Even though I didn't, I mean, I thought it was okay movie. It wasn't bad. But what I saw Tom Cruise do in that movie, I was like, I don't feel like Tom Cruise brought a lot to Oblivion.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how I feel with a lot of his action movies. I feel like his movies are good around him.
Mm-hmm.
But as we can kind of transition to in just a minute, like, I felt like this is good partly because of him.
Right.
And I feel like I don't hate Tom Cruise, and I don't hate a movie just because he's in it.
Mm-hmm.
But he never excites me about wanting to go see a movie. And I feel like I never, like, there's some people that I will go see a movie just because they're in it. You know, like,
right.
Like we mentioned before, I'm really interested in seeing Guardians of the Galaxy because Chris Pratt's in it.
Yeah.
I mean, it looks cool, but, like, I think Chris Pratt's going to bring something to that specifically that I don't think if you would have cast Tom Cruise in it, it wouldn't
right.
be the same.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't go to a Tom Cruise movie because of Tom Cruise. I go if it's a good movie, and, like, and then I hope
that it's a good movie.
The hope that it's a good movie. Well, it looks, you know, attractive to me as a film, and I consider him a reliable person to be in the movie. You know, it's like if it looks like a good movie, but Nicolas Cage is in it,
yeah.
You'd be like, well, crap, you know. But for Tom Cruise, I mean, I feel like he's a reliable person a reliable actor, and I enjoy him in roles. I know I'm going to not be put off by his performance because he gives so much to it. There's a lot of intensity to it. Like, I really love Mission Impossible 3 because it's the J.J. Abrams movie, but Tom Cruise really helps that movie with a lot of intensity and a lot of emotion that he puts into it. And it's like with somebody else that might not be there.
Hmm.
So. Hey, so that Mission Impossible 3 super reminded me of Alias, which I was a big fan of.
Yeah.
3 and 4, what is your favorite Mission Impossible?
I have not seen 4.
You haven't seen 4?
I haven't.
You've got to see it.
Isn't that Ghost Protocol?
I know, it's Ghost Protocol, yeah.
Oh, it's
one of those movies that just, like, there's so many movies to see, and, like, it just has stayed on the queue, and I just haven't gotten to it yet.
Well, along with Brooklyn Nine-Nine,
I really
want
to see it, yeah.
I can give you
I never saw Oblivion either, you know. I just, there's just movies that just pass me by. And
I thought you would have saw Oblivion for no other reason that Jamie Lannister was in it.
Well, I know. Yes. He's really good. You know, before he got, like, really popular with Game of Thrones, he's in a lot of movies that you just don't realize he was in, and he's been in some good movies. And
huh.
Anyway.
I haven't checked that out.
Did you just mention Brooklyn Nine-Nine?
I did.
I'm just getting into it on Hulu.
It's amazing, right?
Yeah, I missed basically the whole first season. I saw a few of the early episodes, and now I'm watching it straight through because all the episodes are still there. It's awesome. I love it.
Yeah, I just posted today. I was like, I know a lot. For some reason, people think I watch a lot of TV and movies. So from time to time, I'll just throw things out there because I often get people saying, "Hey, what's a good whatever?" I'm looking for a show that's like this, or I'm looking for a show that's like this, or a movie that's like this.
Right.
And so I just kind of threw it out there. I was like, just finished season one of Brooklyn Nine-Nine. Really impressed that in its first season, it's already one of my favorite comedies.
That's cool.
I totally agree.
Yeah, I don't expect a whole lot from comedies or sitcoms in their first season. I expect them just to kind of last long enough to get a season two where they actually know their characters and know how to, like, craft the jokes better. But Brooklyn Nine-Nine, I'm just so impressed. Which is totally off topic, but I'm completely
yeah.
cool with that as well.
Something that Tom Cruise is not in. So.
So, well, and Mark hasn't seen it at all yet, so which is why I was going
to... Yeah, that's probably the next thing I'm going to watch.
Yeah, I was going to let
in between,
him
in between rewatching Star Trek The Next Generation.
That's right.
What is you guys' favorite Tom Cruise movie then, all time?
Gosh.
Favorite. Wait, do you already have one in mind, Matt? Because I have to think about this for a second.
No, I didn't. I just thought of the question. Let me see. I mean, just about...
Everyone quickly goes to IMDb.
Yes, I'm getting there right now.
I mean, I really do like some of his Mission Impossible stuff, but for some reason, I'm not saying Oblivion's my favorite of his movies, but for some reason, I really like that. I think I wasn't expecting much going into it, but ended up being more thought-provoking than I thought it would be. Yeah, I felt pretty good about it.
Right now, looking down the list, I'm thinking Tropic Thunder.
Tropic Thunder's there, yeah. I mean,
because he's so different.
Yeah, he's not. I mean, he doesn't star in that one. So, I mean, I grew up as a really big fan of Top Gun. Mm-hmm. So, like, I watched. That was one of the. As a kid, you have a. You know, you watch a bunch of movies and over and over and over. And I really watched that one. Probably, if I had to pick one, I'd probably say Minority Report.
Huh.
That's a good one.
I love Minority Report.
I just found mine. The Last Samurai. Have you guys seen that?
Oh yeah, yeah. That's a good movie.
That's really good.
I just don't like The Last Samurai for some reason.
I'm looking at his early 2000 movies. Minority Report, awesome. Last Samurai, awesome. Collateral, have you guys seen that? I think that's one
with... Yeah, I liked Collateral a lot, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Really good. I actually even kind of like War of the Worlds, even though I know it's not great. I kind of like that.
No, I thought it did some really weird things, but I was on the edge of my seat most of the time. Mm-hmm. Anyway.
Yeah, Mission Impossible 3 and 4, both great. I haven't seen Valkyrie. I have it on my shelf to watch. And like I said, Jack Reacher is one that just came out recently that I've been wanting to watch. Have you guys seen that one?
It's in my Netflix queue.
Yeah, right towards the top as well. Valkyrie's good. I mean, it's historical. It's just, you know the story going in, but they do it really well. I mean, it's Bryan Singer that directed it, so he does a good job.
You know, I would say that if I had to pick, I would probably pick Interview with a Vampire.
Oh.
Yeah.
Or Interview with a Vampire, with the Vampire. Which is weird, because I feel like lots of people have kind of said it's a silly movie, but I really enjoyed it. Brad Pitt's a little whiny. But.
I gotta say Top Gun and Minority Report.
Top Gun.
All right, I'll go with Last Samurai and Mission Impossible 3.
There you go.
So I'm expecting now...
Although I could put Edge of Tomorrow right there with them.
Oh, well... Yeah, but I guess we don't technically count it because we haven't talked about it yet.
Well,
we're getting ready to. But
it doesn't count until we talk about it.
So now, since I don't really do top 5, top 10, top 20 lists, I'm expecting a sci-fi Christian of...
Top 5 Tom Cruise movies.
Top 5 Tom Cruise movies.
I would... Honestly, that would be a great topic I would like, but I'm not positive my co-host would be into that.
Hey, this is, having a podcast co-host is like having a marriage to a lot of degrees. You know, there's a lot of compromise there. There's a lot of grace and forgiveness. And, you know, sometimes if you're really into it, he just needs to bite the bullet and be like, you know, Matt, I'll do this for you.
Yeah, yeah.
All right. I'll see what I can do.
Yeah.
Okay, so, but we are here to talk Edge of Tomorrow. Really liked it, and
despite what the intro just gave you,
I'll say this too. We are going to talk spoilers, so after I give this little synopsis for those of you who are doing this, if you haven't seen Edge of Tomorrow and you don't want the movie spoiler, we're going to spoil the crap out of it because almost from the very beginning there are things that I don't think you would necessarily glean from the trailer. So Edge of Tomorrow is a sci-fi film based on the Japanese graphic novel All You Need Is Kill. In my opinion, and lots of other people's opinion, it's refreshingly original, even though you can compare it to Groundhog Day, Saving Private Ryan, Starship Troopers, and The Matrix, which I think the fact that you can't really label it as like, oh, this is just like whatever movie, or it's whatever movie too, I think that kind of says how it is original, even though it's hearkening to all these other ideas. The story revolves around an alien invasion that's taken over Europe, and it's spreading, and then the humans have... set up this massive counteroffensive that's planned to hit, I guess, the beaches of Normandy. And, you know, movie came out on, like, June 6th, D-Day. It's very apropos, I guess.
Apropos,
And Tom Cruise's character, Major Bill Cage, is literally dropped right in the middle of it.
Yep.
So, like we start everything, did you enjoy the movie? And, Matt, you're on Skype. You get to go first.
Yeah, I definitely enjoyed it. Yeah, I have more I want to say about why I enjoyed it, but yeah, I would say recommend.
Recommend. Like, what are some of the biggest things that you enjoyed about it? Like, you don't have to go into great detail, but I mean...
Sure. I mean, the action was great. I thought... there were some characters that they developed and some they didn't, but the ones they took the time to develop were developed well. I thought it was surprisingly funny in a lot of parts, which I wasn't expecting at all, so I like a little humor in my action movies as well. And Tom Cruise.
And Tom Cruise. Hashtag Tom Cruise.
Yeah.
So, Mark?
I thoroughly enjoyed it. I, of course, love sci-fi and action movies, and this is just one of the best that there is, really. I mean, this is the best that you can get when you hope for a good just on the edge of your seat sci-fi action movie. It did all the sci-fi elements really well. It did all of the personal elements really well. It's paced really well. It's just really well.
Really well?
Really well.
It is really well.
Oh, and also Emily Blunt.
Emily Blunt. That doesn't hurt.
You might have liked it for Tom Cruise, but I liked it for Emily Blunt. She was great in the movie. And the movie had this, just as a broad stroke kind of thing, of course we'll get into detail, but it had this really kind of sense of like, this is actually a dangerous situation. Like every time they were on the beach, it felt real trouble. Like this is life or death. And that's something that you can get away from in sci-fi, just because it's just, it's aliens and people battling, and sometimes that could just be escapist fun, and that's really good. But this, I thought, had this level of urgency that I was not expecting it to have. I thought it was just going to be kind of a lot of shooting aliens and explosions. There was a lot of that, but it also came with a sense of urgency and a sense of humor. Great sense of humor to this movie. So mm-hmm. lots to enjoy.
Yeah, I would say that I also really enjoyed it. I'm glad that, it's always better when everyone enjoys the movie we're talking about.
Yeah.
But it was even better than I thought it would be. I remember I first reached out to Matt to ask him if he would want to be on the show, kind of like some movies that he was interested in and being a part of and discussing. And he'd mentioned this one. And I think, I don't remember your exact words were, Matt, but you were like, it looks real like it's going to be really great. And I was like, oh, I'm just afraid. I'm afraid like the previews look so good. I was afraid it's going to let us down.
Yeah.
And I'm really glad that
this is what Elysium should have been last summer. I mean, like the previews for Elysium looked amazing, and mm-hmm. it was like, oh, that movie is going to be killer, and it was awful. And so, this one looked just amazing and killer, and it was. So they really delivered. And I got to give props to the movie for actually having a movie where Bill Paxton did not annoy the crap out of me. I hated the fact that I actually really enjoyed Bill Paxton's character.
You're typically not a Bill Paxton fan?
Not at all. Uh-oh. I can't stand Bill Paxton.
No, I like him in some things, but I think the bad taste in my mouth with Bill Paxton is just watching him in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. He did it for some people. He's doing it for some people. I don't know if we're spoiling Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah.
It's just not, I couldn't stand like almost every line that came out of his mouth in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. And it's partly dialogue, partly him trying to be over the top.
Yeah. And I for whatever reason, watched Big Love on HBO, and just there was a sour taste at the end of that one for me. And then just pretty much everything, like just looking at him. And if you look at him as an actor, he just annoys me. It just annoys me.
Are you also a Bill Paxton fan, Matt?
I wouldn't call myself a Bill Paxton fan, but to
have a t-shirt. Me and Bill.
I hate to contradict you. I know I'm a visitor here today, but I loved him on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
So. No, that's fine.
Please contradict me. Yeah, I totally don't mind at all.
I have no problem with disagreement. As long as we can have a conversation about it.
Sure.
So,
and without spoiling Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., I liked him in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. for like the first couple episodes he was in.
It was until he started being in the show more and took a more of a
the character took
role.
A turn and
God, how generic. Like, we will spoil Edge of Tomorrow. We will try very hard not to spoil Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Do you like him in anything else, or is it just Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. that?
Well, I kind of feel like maybe one of the main reasons he was in this movie it almost to go back to his role in Aliens. Lots of similarities,
which so. I enjoy in him in Aliens. I mean, it's he plays the Bill Paxton character in Aliens, so
it's kind of crazy. He's also in the sequel of Predator, in a lesser role, but still kind of both those big.
Yeah.
So, I honestly he's not a guy who I look at and say I'm going to go see this movie for that actor, but I like him okay.
Yeah,
I like him okay.
Yeah,
that's perfect. Like I said, except for Nicolas Cage, I'm perfectly fine with almost anyone liking anybody.
Yeah.
But that's just that's also a personal thing.
Oh, so you hate Nicolas Cage and everything?
He does. Well, no, I really like Raising Arizona.
Yeah,
but that's one of those things where the movie's so good, in spite of him in it. But almost everything else, he almost ruined Kick-Ass for me.
Oh yeah.
But
please tell me that you're going to cover Left Behind.
This is a fundamental question of why this podcast exists. because people were like, oh, are you going to review, and they list obvious Christian movies.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I know.
Yeah.
I mean, like, at one point, I feel like I almost should, so we can address lots of the issues with Christian movies
mm-hmm.
and how the themes that they think they're portraying are not actually being portrayed.
No.
But no.
Get me out of that one.
Yeah. Well, but that's the thing. I think, you know, it would end up turning into basically us just griping and complaining a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like there's a lot of other Christian and pop culture podcasts out there. I don't know, like, if there's any that we might know from people on the show right now who have already addressed that in their episodes. And I think it's been, you know, blogged about. I don't think that's like treading new ground. Whereas I feel like there's very few people out there trying to be like, all right, so let's talk about Eternity and Edge of Tomorrow, you know, you know, let's talk about what it's like living the same day every day
mm-hmm.
or not, you know, and Edge of Tomorrow. So
what are we going to talk about on this podcast?
So at some point.
That is actually a good question. Did you guys get any feel for how many days in a row he lived this day?
I assumed it was.
It's a couple hundred. I mean, like, it kind of, and I think it was good that they didn't worry about that. You know, it was kind of like, you know, they'd be playing a scene and you would think this is the first time they're there, and it's actually probably the you know, 12th, 15th, whatever time that they've been there. So mm-hmm. I enjoyed that they didn't focus too much on the mechanics of everything, and they're just like, this is the setup, this is the impetus, okay, let's have some fun.
Yeah.
So, not really.
I mean, did you, Matt? Yeah.
No, I've been trying to figure it out just because I'm interested to know how long, because, you know, kind of going back to Groundhog's Day, somebody recently did some sort of report on Groundhog's Day where they looked at how long does it typically take someone to learn to play the piano to mm-hmm. the level that Bill Murray was able to, and how long does it take somebody to do this card trick? And then they kind of figured out how long he probably lived out that day, and it was crazy long. I can't remember how much it was, but I wonder for this movie how long he was actually stuck in that loop.
I don't know. I just feel like to be able to do some of the things that he did and memorize some of the things that he does mm-hmm. in this film, like, you would have had to gone through that day after day after day. I mean, there's repetitive tasks like I do for my job that I have to do more than once, and they're not like remember exactly how many seconds it is until the alien pops up on my left.
Yeah,
you know, like when do you pay attention to things?
You have
like
aliens
that?
At your work? They pop up and you have to fight them.
Sometimes I have to pay attention to things like that.
Awesome. Yeah, and he wasn't even counting the seconds; he just knew instinctively. Okay.
Yeah, he did.
So,
yeah,
it. Hundreds and hundreds of days he lived over and over.
Yeah, I kind of assumed it was at least a year, probably. Mm-hmm. I always feel like this is a pretty safe assumption to assume they're already into at least a year. But, okay, so it made me think of this question to throw out to you guys. Like, do you ever think, or have you ever thought about what you would do if you could go back and relive a day? Like, or is there a day that you can think of that you would like to relive? Either because it was so good,
mm-hmm.
or because you wanted to fix it.
Yeah.
And Matt, being newly married, I'm sure you have a number of these days already.
You know, it's kind of funny. I actually, before I was married, a couple years back here, maybe 3 years ago, when in the early days of my podcast, I did an episode where I kind of just threw out the question to the audience about, you know, God has all the power, right? He could do anything mm-hmm. he wants. And so could he be kind of like a divine time machine for you? So you mess something up, you want to get your life back on track. Is it, I mean, I would say it's within God's power to let you go back and relive your life over, but would he? And so I've actually, you know, thought about this a lot, but I think kind of where I'm at right now today, and I've talked about this with my wife, like, we both have things that maybe we would want to change in our past, but looking at where I am today, how happy I am, how I love my marriage, love my life, I wouldn't change anything. Because this is, like, everything got me to where I am right now. So, yeah, I've thought about this question quite a bit, actually.
I think I've thought about more about time travel in general than I've thought about, like, reliving a day or reliving my life. I have thought about going back and reliving parts of my life that were, like, good. Like, man, I'd really love to experience that again. I'd love to be, you know, in high school with my buddies playing music, or, you know, in college to be kind of, like, you know, that kind of era where you're just exploring and you're free and you have a lot of, you meet a lot of new people and stuff like that. And, you know, but then I think, well, technically would that mean that I would have to re-experience the bad things and, mm-hmm. you know, the pain that you've been through and so stuff like that. So, I mean, I think I would much rather, continue on with my age and my life if I could have like the DeLorean or the TARDIS and just go back in time and travel around and see things that were
and basically treat time like with the Prime Directive in mind.
Yeah,
you just pop in, you see it.
Yeah, you go. Yeah,
I'd rather visit the past than relive the past.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I'd rather like hang out in 1940 than like
1940.
Yeah, like yeah,
because you're gonna kill Hitler.
No, I mean. Not to kill Hitler. I think the 40s and the 50s are cool time. And
I would want to go back to 00 and just go hang out with Jesus.
I mean, I definitely would go hang out with Jesus.
Look how much better of a Christian I am than you. No, actually, it was really funny because I thought of this question because yesterday my wife and I were talking about, I guess it sounds like it was a very similar conversation to what Matt's describing. And I remembered this this quote, and I had to go look up who did it. And it doesn't matter. I'm going to attribute it to Oscar Wilde, based on what the internet tells me. And it says, "Youth is wasted on the young."
Yeah.
And I think it was because I was driving through the college campus, or I was driving through the University of North Carolina at Greensboro, and I was just thinking about like all the times I had there. And then it made me think about like my time in high school and how I'm such a different person now. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I wish I could go back and live some of those years with the knowledge that I have now. Like how much I would have done it better. You know, I would have cared less about what people said about me. I would have tried to get a degree in audio visual presentation since I really love podcasting now. But I didn't learn that until I was like 28.
Yeah.
So you know, the things I would do different. But at the same time, you know, and. You know, my wife kind of said this, and I was trying to wholeheartedly agree with her before she could get it out, so she didn't think I was just backpedaling. But all the things that I did in my past led me to where I am now,
mm-hmm.
and I'm pretty super happy.
Yeah,
you know, like I always tell her like I really wanted to be an architect when I came out of high school, and I didn't get into the architect school that I wanted to. I was like, well, if I'd have known what it would have taken to get into that school, I would love to go back. You know, do this and this, get into that school and have been an architect. But then I would have gone to a different school than my wife went to. I would have never met her.
Mm-hmm.
And I would have been hypothetically married to someone else that wasn't her. And, you know, that's not cool to me. Yeah. Like, I love where I'm at. But I think the biggest thing that I wish, if I could go back, there I've experienced the loss of a couple friends. And I wish, like, knowing how and when they were going to die.
Mm-hmm.
If I could go back
mm-hmm.
and undo that,
oh sure,
mm-hmm. I would want that. But then you know, you get into very theological questions, like you know, did God want them, you know, to
right.
die then,
right.
or you know, is there some bigger thing? Like, what about all the things that affect the people they affected through their death?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and like, what do you think of death? Is it actually? Because I feel like Lewis addresses this in The Great Divorce or right. something. He might not, so people who are bigger Lewis fans can correct me or comment or whatever. But like he's talking about like people who are alive always wish the dead back.
Mm-hmm.
But if you knew what heaven was like, you would never wish anyone away from that.
Right. Yeah.
So yeah,
I think it's from The Great Divorce, yeah.
So now that we're all heavy like that.
Well, it's interesting because if you look at it in terms of a film, because I mean like there's... While you were talking, I thought of like 100 examples of like really good moments. Like, you know, there's a moment in one of the most recent episodes of Game of Thrones where one of the Unsullied, the main one, the Grey Worm, is talking to...
Spoilers for Game of Thrones.
Well, I mean, it's not really. I mean, he's, you know, he's an Unsullied, which means he you know, has gotten his private parts cut off so mm-hmm. that he could just, you know, he's been through a lot of pain and suffering just so he could be this perfect warrior. And, you know, he's kind of has these feelings for this girl. And she says, you know, do you wish that they had never done that to you? And he's like, well, if that had never happened to me, I wouldn't have become an Unsullied. I wouldn't have gotten freed by Daenerys and I wouldn't have never met you. So it's like a lot of pain. You went through all that pain just because this is worth it. And that's where it brought you to. But if you think of it in terms of like a movie and time traveling, especially like in Edge of Tomorrow, you know, time travel for all intents and purposes, as we know it right now, does not exist. and is basically an impossibility as far as we know it. And,
but that's why we love sci-fi,
right? And that's why we love sci-fi. But in the physics realm, it doesn't exist now. So if it did, would that be outside of the will of God? Is that you know, is time the will of God? I mean, is how things play out the will of God, or is it? You get into some really deep theological questions, saying, you know, if would and would you have to say that that was God putting his will through, like, going back in time and giving, you know, Cage, this character in this movie, the opportunity to correct things and to defeat the enemy. I mean, it's a... You can go that route.
Yeah. Well, like, is the will of God active or passive?
Yeah, exactly.
And I think depending on which seminary you go to,
yeah,
you're going to have a very different
right
take on that. Wait, were you going to say something, Matt?
No. The only thing I was thinking of is, you know, if we found out that time travel was possible, I guess we couldn't say it was against the will of God. So as long as it's not possible,
right,
I think we can say it must be against the will of God.
Well, that's what like I think my point about watching a film is, like, if in that film time travel is possible, so then time travel is in the will of God. If you want to take it. Mm-hmm. You know, take it that way. So it's interesting, and I thought again about the movie. I really like that they just didn't put a whole lot of questions into the time travel thing, and they just said this is the mechanic we're using for the film, and we're gonna have a lot of fun with it and make a really good movie out of it.
Here's what I was wondering. So we know that. Well, I guess it depends on again where you land theologically, but some people believe once you die, you instantly go to heaven or hell. Other people believe that maybe you're in some sort of spiritual sleep, but let's assume that just for the case of this argument, that you do go one place or the other. So we've got all these people getting killed on this D-Day, like Normandy beach, mm-hmm, action. So they're dead. They go someplace, but then Cage reawakens the morning before, and they're all alive again. So what's happening there? Like how many?
Yeah,
they all get undecided.
Yeah, is he experiencing alternate realities, actually, or is he really experiencing that day over? So are there different versions of these same people all in heaven or hell? Or, I mean,
well, that's one of those, like, people who theorize about time. Like, is time a line? And you keep, right, popping back and you remake the line.
Right.
Or is every second, like, you know, like it strings out into infinite possibilities. So all you're doing is bouncing from string to string. You know, and they're like, gosh, if I'd have known we were getting into this, I probably would have looked it up. But it's like infinite possibilities,
yeah,
and like infinite possibilities and infinite realities, and they all exist in one, whatever, and well, they exist in different realities. Well, I'm not a physicist.
Yeah.
But you know, like this concept that all things. I mean, it happens in the final episode of Star Trek: The Next Generation.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
spoilers. Jeez.
If you haven't seen
'93.
Yeah. If you haven't seen the final episode
all time.
Yeah, that's right. It's one of the greatest finales.
Yeah,
of all time.
I mean, and so you have all the things that were possible did happen,
uh-huh,
and then they all come into the same one, you know, so you have all these, like, even slight differences.
Yeah.
You know, like, oh, I sneezed yesterday, I didn't sneeze today.
Right.
Boom, you know, boom, different, mm-hmm, different timeline. And that's all really interesting to think about, and then interesting to think about, like, are those individual souls?
Mm-hmm.
What does heaven look like in that? Is there a different heaven? Is there,
right,
a God in every... Oh, my gosh. My head's going to explode.
Well, the one... And I don't really know much about this. I just know that the concept of time, as far as I've heard a physicist explain it, is not actually a straight line that you just can kind of go on points. There, I actually heard it put as, we are standing stationary and time is washing over us, like through us. It's like a constant stream that's just passing over us and we're just in the middle standing through it. I don't know what implications that means, but it seems like if it's like, I think of it as like a stream of water, and once it hits you, it just kind of dissipates. There's no way to like collect that and go back
to it.
Through it. Yeah. So it's like squeezing all the toothpaste out of a tube of toothpaste, and it's like you can't, it's really hard to put back in. It's not going to look the same if you go back. So, mm-hmm, if there is a way to go back, time could look very, very different.
Hmm.
You know, it could just be not, it won't, you know, it's like almost like it won't be the same. But yeah. Sci-fi. Sci-fi just says, yeah, we're just going to do this, and it's awesome.
Well, but even then, there's lots of different ways to do time travel. You know, like there's like is this Terminator 1 or Terminator 2
or Doctor Who
or Doctor Who? Yeah. You know, or is it the great philosopher? Is it Russ Cole? You know,
sure.
Time is a circle. Yeah. It all comes back around.
Yes.
I think this is what, I'm not sure if this lines up exactly biblically, but if, you know, let's put the Bible aside, just sci-fi wise.
Just sci-fi wise,
just for a second. I think the two options I'd be on board with are either you can travel through time, but you can't change anything, so it's impossible. So whatever happened always happened. So I could be
this is the X-Men thing, X-Men Future Past, two ideas that were conflicting in that movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so basically you can go into the past, but you can't change anything. So that's one thing. And the other one I'd say is, the other option, I guess, is that every single time you travel through time, you're creating an alternate parallel universe, parallel reality. And so you can do whatever you want there because it won't actually change the line that you came from. So every single time you travel, so in a sense then, Tom Cruise in this movie, maybe every single time he went back, he is actually, with his memories from the first reality, living out this life in a different reality. So those people that died, they really died, but now there's a different version of those same people around.
Well, it's almost like, it's almost like this is a different option, right? Because the day is getting reset. So the day, when he starts the day, it has never been lived except by him. So like the day hasn't existed in time when he starts it. So he keeps going back to the same point in time and restarting time itself, right?
Yeah.
So it's almost like this is not even like he's going back in the past to change something that has, you know, we haven't seen the future yet. You know, a lot of time travel movies, you know the future, you know at least the present. And so when you go back in the past, you know the future. So it's back to the future that you go. So, anyway, but it's like this one is just kind of an interesting concept of like you just reset the day. So you start up, you try again.
Well, so, and there's a term that some of the reviewers that have been talking about this movie have kind of coined, like the video gamization of this film, where it is basically like playing a video game. It's like you turned on your console, you were trying to get to the end boss, you couldn't get there, you died, whoop, you just start over, new life.
Yep.
You know, you're playing Call of Duty or whatever, you die, you respawn, you try again. You know, you just get better and better and better and better. And like, does that, it brings up, well, it brings, what it does is it brings up the question of almost like having audiences that expect main characters not to die. Like they always get more, they always get more chances. And I've noticed in lots and lots of films, main characters are never going to die.
Mm-hmm. Well,
is that just me?
Yes and no. I mean,
yes, it is just you.
Well, it's just you. I agree with you, and I think this movie kind of has a good setup to kind of counteract that because he's getting the chance to start over and try again so that he doesn't die. Whereas, like, you know, Tony Stark's not going to die. He's just not going to die, you know, necessarily. I mean, we don't.
Because isn't that what we're all waiting for with Joss Whedon doing the Avengers? We're just waiting for him to, like,
well, now in the hands of Joss Whedon, yes. Somebody's going to die. But, you know, I think when you watch a superhero film, you know, when you watch the second Captain America, you knew there was Avengers 2 coming. So, and you knew he was in it. So, you know, he's not going to die. So that's different than, like, there's really no stakes for me with Captain America because I know that he's going to be in the next movie. Whereas with this one, it's like, I don't know if he's going to die or not, but if he's not going to die, then it's better than he's just like, he's went through a really harrowing situation and he made it out alive. He actually got to perfect the situation and do his best to not die. You know what I'm saying? Does that make, like, it has a better explanation for him not dying.
Then yes, a classic movie of just like,
just straightforward timeline.
But even then, it doesn't. And I don't necessarily want to skip to the end, but like...
But I mean, we could talk about the end because that's the big... Everybody loves this movie, and the only thing they're divided on is the end. Right?
Yeah.
I would say so.
Matt, what did you think about the end?
Yeah, let's talk about it. So, you know, up front, I want to say I did like this movie, but there, you know, throughout our conversation, there'll be a few times where I nitpick a little bit, and the end is my biggest
area of basically the
biggest nitpickery.
Yeah, the biggest negative I have about the movie. So yeah, just to kind of jump on what you were just saying, the whole movie we've been watching all these characters die and then come back, die and then come back. So we've kind of been preparing for their death the entire movie, and in a sense, kind of desensitized to the fact that we may lose Rita or we may lose Cage there. So the end happens. We get to the final big boss, just like in the video games. And so they defeat him, but along the way, they die doing it. So to me, I thought noble sacrifice. I love it. I really liked the ending until it flashes back again. And now he's gone back further than he did the first time. But still, the ramifications of what he did still stand. So even though when he killed the Omega and all the aliens, that was in the future of when he woke up, they're still dead. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, you're saying that doesn't really make a lot of sense.
It doesn't. Not only does it not make sense, it really takes away from the big effect the movie could have had. I think they should have died. This is my biggest thing about the movie. Whereas I liked it and I would recommend it to people, both of the characters should have just died in this movie. And then the movie kind of ends on a somber note, but also hopeful because now humanity is going to be coming out of this huge mess that they've been in for 5 years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, without ever knowing who the real hero was.
Exactly. And like I said, we've been prepared for their death the whole time because we've seen Tom Cruise die hundreds of times, maybe not hundreds, but we've seen them die dozens of times in this movie. We've seen Rita die. We've seen all the other characters die. Everybody dies heroically. It's great. And I think that that's taken away from them by living. I mean, sure, it's nice that the character gets to live out his life and possibly connect with Rita, but I don't think it's as satisfying from a film and story standpoint.
Okay, so I want to also take the time to agree with you, Matt, and that's basically how I felt about it, even though, like you said, also really enjoyed the film. And even I threw the general question of like, hey, we're going to talk about Edge of Tomorrow, and did anyone have any comments? And I wanted to point out that JR, who was actually on the show last episode, he said that he enjoyed the film, but they should have left out the final 3 minutes of the film. So it seems like a fairly popular opinion that the last 3 minutes didn't fit tonally into the story. But I know from cursory conversations with Mr. Mark here that he does not agree. And so I wanted to make sure that we kind of got that groundwork laid before Mark lets us know what's up.
Okay, so there's yes, I'm overprepared for this, so I'm probably gonna talk too long. So stop me, please, if you want to interject. But,
okay, we're done.
You're wrong. Shut up. No, basically, okay. So there's kind of two reasons why I'm super okay with the ending. Now, I totally agree that they botched it. I think that there's a lot better ways that they could have handled the same ending. Better lines he could have said instead of just smirking at the end. But, you know, I thought that was fine, whatever. But it's on a broad stroke level, there's kind of a broad stroke level and then a thematic level for me. The broad stroke level is, this is a movie that gives you everything you want in a summer blockbuster movie. All right? And it even gives you the happy ending. So I'm okay with that because a lot of times you just get the sacrifice in the end and it's sad and you're left on a somber note. Now, I understand that that could make for a more realistic ending, more realistic interpretation of the story. I totally get that. It stays with the tone of the stakes being raised after he loses his blood and loses the power to reset the day. So, like this, you know, it does cheapen those stakes. And I agree with that because I was like, with everybody, I think everybody's like, oh no, oh crap, he's lost his blood. That means you die, you die. And so, you know, we learn in the end that evidently not, because you get the power of the Omega. But thematically, if you really look at what this film is about, you know, whether you agree with the ending or not, they set up the ending the whole time. And it goes back to Bill Paxton's, because, you know, you have to, if you're going to repeat the same dialogue every, you know, 5 minutes in the movie, it has to have some kind of meaning to it. And so,
because everything goes back to Bill Paxton.
Everything goes back to Bill Paxton, dang it. So he says, you know, I got the quote. His speech to him is, you know, you're a coward and a liar, putting your life above theirs. You know how he talks. The good news is there's hope for you, Private. Hope in the form of glorious combat. Battle is the great redeemer. the fire and crucible in which the only true heroes are forged, the one place where all men truly share the same rank, regardless of what parasitic scum they were going in. I envy you, Cage. Tomorrow morning you will be baptized, born again. And then he also says to his troops that through readiness and discipline, we are masters of our fate. And so I really feel like Cage got baptized and was born again through this film.
With water and the blood.
With fire and blood.
No, you're right. He was in water. That's interesting.
Yeah, he was. So they set up this whole baptism of Cage. And so he gets to live his life after... Like, if he had continued living his life the way he was at the beginning, he would have just been a, you know, kind of a jerk and
I think the word you're looking for is a dick.
A dick, yeah. Weak, you know, a coward, like he says. You know, you're a coward and a liar. And so once he puts his life above, you know, their life above his and makes that sacrifice and goes through all of this, he is, and it's a very classic, you know, three-act movie setup. I mean, this movie is really straightforward, and that's the thing. It does that perfectly, even with the happy ending. And so they set up this baptism of him, and does he come out of the water in the end? I think he has to come out of the water in the end. I mean, you know, say what you want about how easy that was done and how that was set up and how they could have ended the movie and everything, but he has to be baptized and brought up out of the baptism, and I think if he just dies, he's not. And, you know, one of the comments I read online was like, in a movie where Tom Cruise dies like 400 times, can he not just actually die? You know, but I think thematically, and again, whether you like that or not in the end, and whether you think that fits the story or you would have done it differently, they set up him resetting the day in the end. So it fits the theme of the movie. Does that make sense?
Matt.
Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah, so that's why I was okay with it, because I knew, like, when I saw the ending, I was like, okay, because everybody had played it up like, well, the movie's really great, but I don't know about the ending. So the whole time I'm sitting there thinking, what's this ending that everybody doesn't like? And so I finally see it, and I'm like, but the baptism and the fire and crucible of the battle, it made sense to me immediately. And I liked it, because I'm a sucker for a happy ending. And that's going back to the broad stroke reason of, like, I want to go to a movie. I want to see the hero kick everybody's butt and win in the end and get the girl.
Yeah.
I mean, that's naturally what we want in a movie, and we got that, like, in a really cool way.
Yeah, I definitely agree with the hero stuff. What about, what would you say about the fact that what he did in well, what would have been the future still stands in now the past? So what I mean by that is he wakes up in the helicopter, but his right. actions that haven't happened yet are still in existence in that new reality. What do you make of that?
I really don't know. I mean, I think that's one of the reasons they botched it. They didn't give an explanation for why that would be okay. The only explanation that, and again, it's missing in the movie, but the only explanation that I came up with that is instead of getting the blood of the Alpha, he got the blood of the Omega. And so he has the power to reset the day and...
You mean consider whenever?
Yeah, I mean...
No, okay, check this out.
Okay.
Keep this. Okay, so he was always going back about 24 hours into
yeah,
the past.
Yeah, yeah.
What the movie does not, I don't think, make very clear is the fact that when they go find the Omega,
mm-hmm.
I believe it's before the invasion.
Okay.
Yeah, so technically he's still going back a certain number of hours into the past, but they actually go kill the Omega before the invasion. So right, he still right. goes 24 hours back in the past, but yeah. that's actually before... He usually dies the next day on the beach.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, does that answer the question?
No, I don't
know. No.
about why he goes back to when he does?
Oh, no, I was fine. I understood why he went back to when he did, because it was the day before, because they killed him they killed the Omega that night. Okay. So they didn't get to the next day.
I've just not been listening to anybody talk to the past.
He doesn't actually go back exactly 24 hours, because during the Omega battle, it's dark outside, nighttime. And then he goes back, and it's morning, helicopter ride, light out. So
maybe in France, everything's just really depressing.
I don't really mind that he goes back to a different time period. I mostly mind that the actions that he never did exist in that world.
Well, yeah, and I think it has to do with, like, I think they just kind of broad-stroked over the, like, well, if you kill the Omega, then all of the ones are dead, no matter if you reset the day. Which, you know, again, they didn't have a proper explanation for. And really, the day was never reset 24 hours, but the idea behind the day being reset by the Omega was so that they could control fate. And so the only explanation, that's why I was saying, if he got the blood of the Omega, he can control fate instead of just really time. You know, you just, if you know what's coming, you can control fate. I think it's more of an impetus of controlling fate if he really, if he really resets it and the bad guys are gone. So I don't know. I mean, it's definitely not there. It's definitely a big plot hole in the end. But, you know, you can either come out of this with a happy ending or a sorrowful ending. Mm-hmm. And they chose the happy ending. And I thought that they set it up and earned it. I didn't think it was just like, well, that doesn't make any sense. You know what I'm saying? Like, I thought it made sense. And so, you know, again, the way that they did it was kind of botched. But, you know, that's the thing. Like, the movie's so good, you kind of don't care, you know? At least I didn't.
Do you guys think that it was important that he both times woke up from a sleeping state? So he was sleeping on the helicopter. He was sleeping you know, on that pile of bags. Is that important to when he goes back to? Or is it just a coincidence?
I thought it was pretty important.
Yeah.
At least it made the science or the sci-fi mechanism make more sense to me.
It gave it a point and a fixed point in time.
Yeah.
You know?
Like some place where you can, like...
It's kind of like saying your day starts when you wake up.
Or, you know, like you can transport your conscience back to something, but it has to be at a point when your conscience isn't active.
Yeah, stasis.
Or something like that.
Stasis,
so you have to be, like, at a place where you can mentally go back to it.
Right.
Yeah,
but then that implies all the alphas sleep at some point, I guess, too. I don't know. We're just making up sci-fi for this movie.
You know, I had heard, and I'm not sure if this was rumor or true, that there was a lot of rewrites that they were working on, especially for the third act, and that they started filming the movie before they had the end completed. Did you get that?
I did hear that, yeah. And I actually went and I didn't read the book because I know I wouldn't have time to read the whole thing before this. But for research sake, I went and just read the synopsis on Wikipedia. And there it has a lot more meaning to it. And she dies in the end in the book.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's safe for spoilers here since we're talking spoilers.
Yeah.
Tell us about the differences between the book and the movie.
Well, in the book, instead of just the Omega, they have two backups. So, you know, it's not like you just kill the Omega and, oh, we're dead.
So the Mimics have a very good IT, you know, they're prepared.
Yes, they have a
disaster recovery.
They have a good IT setup, yes. They have a good infrastructure. But the book's the story kind of carries a lot longer. She actually has her power the entire time. She never loses it. And I think if I'm right, I remember correctly, you can't lose it. So basically what happens is... They defeat the two backups, so there's, like, the Omega is the main one, but you, like, if something were to happen to the Omega, it would transfer to the others. So they kill the two others, and something like, since they're both still hardwired into the Omega, you know, because they still have the power, she gets, the Omega transfers everything to her as well.
Once they kill the Omega.
No, and I think it's... Either before, I can't remember if they kill the Omega first or whatever, but she becomes the back. She tries to kill him, and so they have this big fight, and he knows that she is now controlled by the enemy, and in order to defeat them, he has to kill her, or else she can reset the day for the enemy. So he ends up having to kill her to save the world. But it's a very similar kind of setup to their relationship and everything, but she ends up dying because he kills her to sacrifice to save the world. But he actually lives in the end. So... And that's another way to do it. I mean, that's the way it was done in the book. But I don't think that ending thematically was set up in this movie. So even though they went into the movie filming it without having an ending.
Yeah, they obviously changed things.
Yeah, so.
All right, I think I got it, guys. Okay, here we go. This is my new explanation for the ending. Okay,
all right, go.
The Omega is just a simple piece of technology. Sure, it flashes somebody back in time, but let's just... assume it's just a piece of technology. He destroys it. It still is able to do what it's made for, which is send somebody back in time. But it's also broken, even though... So it achieves its goal of sending him back in time, but it's broken, so it can't do it anymore. Thus, even though... So Tom Cruise is connected to this piece of technology. He goes back in time, but the actions still stand because it achieved its goal during its destruction. Thus... everything, all the aliens are wiped out there.
Yes.
It's all about a faulty piece of broken technology.
Yes.
That's right.
That's
without
it.
Backups.
Yep.
Should have had backups.
All right. I feel good about this now.
Yeah.
Well, okay, so I'll transition to something else that I felt that this whole reset factor made me think of. And I might, like I said, I might be alone in this, but the movie does something that I think is very hard to do, and that's show the same thing over and over and over and over and over again without us getting bored, but us feeling the tedium that Tom Cruise is going through.
Mm-hmm.
And it really reminded me, or it seemed like a parallel to so many things that, as, I guess, people who believe that there is an eternity, like, how do you not feel like, if you can do something over and over and over again and get bored, if we do go to a heaven where we're living in eternity, that's more than just a year worth of time.
Mm-hmm.
Like, how do we not get bored in heaven?
Boom. mind explosion. I don't know. I mean,
we
can't fathom what heaven is,
yeah.
You know, and we don't know. You know, it's like we're talking about time here. I mean, you know, there is technically, I mean, as far as we know, there's no time in heaven. Time is a man-made device. So, you know, does it, is a minute there feel like a day, or does a day there feel like a minute? You know, we don't know. I don't have an answer to your question at all.
I just wanted to talk for a little while.
Yeah, sure. Any ideas, Matt?
About what heaven will be like and how it won't get bored, boring.
How we won't get bored in heaven.
Yeah, I have a great idea on this. So I think that you know, a lot of people think of heaven as kind of a far off place, but we've talked about on the Sci-Fi Christian how heaven is going to be here on Earth. You know, this just like our bodies are redeemed, Earth will be redeemed, restored, that kind of thing. So, but then taking it to the bigger picture, I think the whole universe is going to be restored and back to what God originally wanted it to be like. So with that being said, I actually think, and this is not just a sci-fi thing, I think this is kind of cool, I think we have a whole universe to explore and to experience and to, like, take pleasure in that God created. So I think there's a lot to see. I mean, even just if you think about this Earth and how there's some super beautiful natural phenomena around, you know, here in America, abroad, you know, it's, and that's with a fallen Earth. Once it's restored, it'll be even more amazing. And then look out into all of the heavens. I think there's mm-hmm. tons to do.
Well, since we're speculating about heaven, because I think that's a really, I think that's a cool way to put it. And in a different way, because we don't technically know. You know, we have images or passages that kind of give us a general idea of what heaven would be like.
Mm-hmm.
But I assume that most of the things that we do here on Earth are basically, what is it, gladiators, like shadows and dust.
Yeah.
I mean, compared to
what we do in life.
Yeah.
Echoes, like, in eternity.
This is what C.S. Lewis says. He calls this reality the Shadowlands. It's just a shadow of what's to come.
Yeah. And so, like, you know, people were talking about how, well, this is a conversation I've had with my wife, and I don't know, like, I feel like I believe it, but it sounds awful, at least right now, because, you know, people always want to know, like, am I going to see my grandpa when I go to heaven, or am I going to see, you know, my mom, or my brother who passed away, or, you know, whatever sibling, or, you know, anything, or my baby that maybe passed away in childbirth, or something, you know, all these people want to know if they're going to be reunited with relatives. And lots of people are we still going to be married in heaven? And from everything that I understand of marriage, at least personally to me, like, marriage is a, for those of us who have had the opportunity to be married, marriage is just a small glimpse of what it's going to be like to be in perfect relationship with the creator of the universe. So if I think that marriage is amazing, and the best parts of my marriage, the best times I've ever had, like, are a grain of sand on the ocean of being with the creator of the universe, then unfortunately I'm probably not going to care
mm-hmm.
if I'm with my wife or not.
Right.
Because all it was someone, like, with not high mental capacities trying to describe something that's indescribable.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I consider the best parts of my marriage to be. And it sounds awful when you say it that way. Because it sounds like I'm saying marriage is awful.
Right.
But I'm saying marriage is amazing. But even, you know, that's nothing compared to how amazing it's going to be. And if it's really that amazing, if our hope is in something that amazing, then I don't think I could get bored of that, even with an eternity to enjoy it.
Right.
So. Yeah, I totally, totally agree. Yeah, and it's like, I mean, even now here on Earth, of course, as humans go, we are supposed to love our wives the most, but we're supposed to love God even more than our wives. And so, yeah, I think I totally agree with what you said.
Well, and this, you know, as much as there's like going back in time in this movie and he relives the same day, you know, it could be like you were saying with like Groundhog Day, it could be thousands of days. You know, as much as that like feels like an eternity, there's really no answer to the question of eternity in this movie at all. It's just kind of, you know, it's very much on Earth and very much time oriented. So, you know, to kind of answer that question of like, you know, how does that concept play into eternity? I think you just go outside of time. You know, I think there's, you know, just to kind of, and I'm just trying to say this to just kind of, you know, bring it back to the film of like, you know, we have no concept. We can only conceptualize going back in time. You know, we can't conceptualize a film that's outside of time. Like, how do you do that? You know, unless you just make an artsy movie that just has no.
No, well, I think if you take that and you take a look at what Tom Cruise's hope was in, like, Tom Cruise was in a position that hypothetically all Christians should be in as well, but most people in general, Christians are not, and that is a position of, like, he did not fear death, because to him, death meant life, or it meant new life.
Yeah.
Most people,
I'm saying? There.
Like,
yeah, I'm there.
Like, given sometimes he didn't want to leave because he was spending time with Emily Blunt, and to be fair,
I'd probably spend a lot of time with Emily Blunt.
People would probably want to spend a lot of time with Emily Blunt, so that's understandable. But what we have is, like I said, he no longer fears death, and not only does he not fear it, but at certain times, like, he welcomes it so he can have a chance to do something over.
Right.
And unfortunately, I don't think, you know, even though, well, let me back up. I do feel like we should feel that way. We should feel like there's no reason to fear death. And because we should not fear death, it should not prevent us from living full lives. And, like, that's all I could think about when I left the movie. I kept thinking about, you know, there's all these people who are like, you know, carpe diem, and, you know, did you get the most out of your day? And it kind of sparked that question that I asked at the beginning, like, would you go back in time to do anything? And I feel like if you feel like you should or you would, you're not doing everything you could today. You know, you're, I get up every Monday, and I'm like, I got to go to work. It's tedium. Like, you're not doing something that's life-giving. That sucks.
Yeah, it does.
I mean, like, yeah. I feel like
it's really good.
It's that question that we tend to always get to when we get to, like, kind of some fundamentalist versus some of the other traditions about, if all that matters is going to heaven, then when you get saved, why does not God not instantly, like, stop your heart and bring you to heaven?
Right.
Obviously, there's a reason, if you're believing in God, that he has you on this earth. And if you're on this earth, you know, this almost comes first full circle to our the will of God conversation. Like, what is that will, and what are we doing, and are we bringing heaven to earth in any kind of way? You know, what are you doing? Are you just running through the days? Are you just watching movies with your brain turned off? Are you recognizing that entertainment is not mindless?
That's right.
And engaging culture. Cheap plug.
Yeah, no, that's really good, and I think that the movie kind of puts it there and gets you to kind of, if you dig into it, examine that, you know, we don't get to reset the day. So we have a day. What do we do with it? And, you know, the stakes are high. I mean, you know, the stakes are what they are when he lost all his blood. You know?
We've already had our transfusion.
Yeah. We've had our transfusion of Christ's blood.
Yes.
Almost become a Sunday school podcast now.
Oh, man.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah, it's good. So, I mean, you know, you could take it to that level, but I think, you know, in the movie, that question is there. Because I think anytime you deal with, that's the great thing about sci-fi, right? I mean, that you can explore characteristics of humanity
without specifically calling them out.
Right. In different ways, in original ways, refreshing ways, or ways that you never could consider in actual life, or in a drama, or in comedy, or whatever. You have the ability to just say science,
because science.
Just because science, and just kind of explore different areas of humanity. And so I think this film did that by not even trying to do it. They just set up a story, they kind of gave it a structure, and they just had a ton of fun with it. I mean, what do you think it is about this film that does that so well? Because there's really no... They don't stop to explain things. They don't stop to zero in on a lot of character interaction, except for, obviously, the two main characters. And even that is just, like, you get little snippets here and there. There's no really, like, long, drawn-out dramatic scenes. What do you think they did really well to just give you that sense of urgency and sense of humanity that we got from this film? Since it's just, I mean, this film, and I really feel like in another director's hands, I mean, Doug Liman's a pretty good director, but, you know, he did such a good job with this because it's so simple, yet it has so much gravity. So what do you think? You guys have any thoughts about that?
Yeah, I'd definitely say that, you know, as opposed to a movie like Groundhog's Day, where as a viewer, we literally saw him relive the exact same day over and over, and it hit a lot of the same beats over and over. This movie built upon what he was learning, so we were also learning along with Tom Cruise. So we'd see some of the scenes over again, but then all of a sudden I would flash to, you know, skip the parts where he's first getting introduced to J-Squad. Let's just go to when he's getting trained. And then, okay, now we're in the battle, and now we're at that house in the field. And so it built. All the knowledge built upon it, and we could kind of ride along with that. The only thing, and then another nitpick I have about the movie is, and you kind of just mentioned this, you know, Bill Cage, Rita, Angela Verdun, those are the only two characters we really know. There are other characters that could have been interesting, but they didn't have time or take the time to develop them. And so then when you get to a thing like the big end battle in Paris, and, you know, all of J-Squad's getting killed, it was sad because, you know, you want them to achieve their mission, but it didn't hit me as deeply because I didn't really even know the names of the people that were being killed.
Right.
Yeah, as they were dropping, it was kind of like, okay, that guy, he had a line or two.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So so I like the two main characters. They did a great job with them. And so, I mean, their great acting and the heart behind them really carried the movie.
Well, and I think that's going to lead really well into our come on moments. But I want to mention this one thing real quick in response to your question, Mark. I think one of the reasons that this does what it does so well is because it just tells us a story. That you know, we actually mentioned before the show, you know, why won't I review Left Behind on, you know, or most other Christian, like, obviously Christian films? Because they stop trying to tell a good story and they try to, like, preach at you or they try to lecture you. And that's why, you know, when people who are training to be pastors go to seminary and stuff, like, you know, you almost every good sermon starts off with an illustration. You know, it doesn't start off being like, the Bible says it, just do it this way.
Yeah.
You know, that's why Jesus tells stories instead of being like, don't punch him in the face, you know, or like, you know, he tells stories because I think, you know, God is a storyteller, so we love to hear stories. I think it's hardwired into us. And Edge of Tomorrow doesn't stop and say, now this was right and this was wrong.
Right.
Hands on hips. Yeah. People can't see. But it basically just tells us a story that reflects these commonalities in humanity that we can all relate to.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
So, yeah. But, like I said, we're about at that time, and I know we're probably going to hit on another thing because we didn't come close to covering everything.
Yeah.
But I want to shift into our come-on moments as we kind of wrap up.
Okay.
So, Matt, I know you've kind of had a couple gripes that you've already mentioned, but any just really big either, you know, like characters, scenes, themes that just made you kind of like almost roll your eyes?
You know, to be honest, because I like so much this movie, I've been trying to kind of intersperse some of those moments throughout here. So let me try to think. Well, I mean, okay, I don't think this was bad in the actual storytelling, but I was really disappointed when they went to the general, and it seems like, okay, they've given him this piece of equipment, everything's going to be fine. And then when I find out it was a trick and they got all arrested, and then he got the blood transfusion, I was like, oh, come on.
Yeah. Yeah, that was tough. I mean, like, you know, it was tough to read the general, I think, a lot, because, I mean, he was just so stoic throughout the whole movie. But that kind of played into the, you know, the plot device. His character was that way, so.
Well, I felt like they kind of threw some of that in there just to get him to a place where he'd need a blood transfusion.
Right.
Like, we never really get, what does the device do, kind of? It, like, the time travel in this movie, lots of the equipment they use, the weapons and stuff, it's all, I think, explained enough. But this little device he jabs into his legs is exactly what Mark said before. Because science.
Because science.
Because science. But, you know, to be honest, the biggest moment was when he came back to life at the very end. That's when that was my biggest disappointment. I was totally fine with a great sacrifice.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I figured everybody would just say the ending. I really didn't have a problem with the ending. I know that shocked some people, but I felt that explained it pretty well about why. But anyway, my come on moment was some of the action at the end where they're attacked, you know, trying to get to the Omega, and Tom Cruise is on the turret gun, and that plane is getting just rocked, and he gets he's like getting dragged through the water and, you know, bouncing off and on, and he gets shoved through this wall, or, you know, basically tumbles down the thing. And I was like, okay, and I know this is like super big action and everything, but like, he didn't hit anything, you know. That was a little bit of a come on moment for me, because it
was when
just,
he was like breaking his back and his leg in the training grounds.
Well, and exactly, because I mean, it was like a lot of this movie has extreme over the top action, but with the impetus of like, this will probably kill you, but that just means we'll reset the day. So once they got the stakes really high, they shouldn't have done action in that way, because that probably would have killed him. You know, like, that just seemed a little too unrealistic in a movie where there's a ton of unrealistic stuff that has realistic consequences. So
yeah,
that was my come on man moment.
Yeah, I think one of the things that I was heavily thinking about was the fact that just because you go back and repeat the day every day, like, you can be more skilled in something. Like, you can have the knowledge, or even like the your mind can have the muscle memory, but your muscles have never actually done that. So Tom Cruise, like, at the end of like almost a day, is still like a pencil pushing guy with no muscles.
Right.
You know, he's gone through the motions tons of times. Like, he should actually be so sore that he can't move after just some of the training sequences, much less training and then going to the beach or anything like that. So
that's a good analysis. That didn't even cross my mind.
Like, I mean, like, you know, because that's the thing. Like, if he would have showed up at the end of the movie and, like, been, like, cut from stone and, like, you know, whatever, then that would have made sense. But that's why I assumed that, was it Rita? Yeah, Rita. That's why she's, like, doing yoga and stuff like that. Like, she went back and she had the skill to do all this stuff, but, like, she didn't actually have, like, probably, like, the muscles or the ability to do a lot of those things.
Right.
Just because, you know, like I said, you can have the knowledge, but it doesn't mean your body's better at it. Yeah. I mean, like, if I came back every day, like, I'm not going to be cut from stone after 100 days.
Right.
I'm still going to be looking like this.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, is pretty good.
Yeah, it's just, you know, it's pretty good.
But, you know, it's not, it's not going to change my physical. I'm, like, if you're out of shape and you can't run a mile, and suddenly, like, Tom Cruise needed to run a mile, he was not going to be able to run a mile just because he practiced running a mile and then died every day. His body wasn't... Anyway, I think I've beat
that point,
Anyway, I hope you're all on the same page.
Yes.
So my come-on moment was the ending as well. I mean,
that
I did have problems with
moment, all that.
But it didn't bother me because I enjoyed the rest of the movie so much.
Yeah.
You know, they did so
much...
It didn't
much matter.
So much of the...
a come-on moment is like, it matters.
Yeah.
Like, that matter. Okay.
And when he woke up at the end of the movie in the helicopter, I didn't say come on then, but when he had that just crap-eating grin on his face, and that's how the movie ended, that's when I was like, come on. If you're going to take us all the way back to Rita, do something with it.
Yeah.
Like, I wanted him to use the middle name, like, use the Rose middle name. Or the thing that, after giving it some thought, like... What I think I would want more than anything else is if she turned to him and said, you know, like, what do you want? And he said, I don't know. We've never gotten this far. And then the movie ended.
Ah, yeah.
I thought that would have been... I thought that was a big miss.
Yeah.
Because I think it would have been such a good line that we would have forgot... We would have stopped caring about the fact that, like, he shouldn't have gone back... Maybe shouldn't have gone back in the first place.
Yeah.
So that was my come on moment. I was like, you had so many lines throughout this entire movie, and I think you could have used any of them and made it better than Tom Cruise just looking silly, smiling. So,
do you think it's safe to say that since the Omega is destroyed, he's not stuck in a loop again? Because, you know, previously this would have been a situation where he's going to have to keep living out this awesome day over and over again. So do you think this is it, right? He's, because the Omega's gone, he's not going to, you know,
reset anything?
Yeah.
Yeah, I was assuming that since Omega was gone, he wouldn't be able to do it again.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I thought kind of the way I explained it in my brain, they didn't explain in the movie, was that he kind of got the power of the Omega to be able to reset the day if he died. But, you know, somebody put it some way online, like, is he going to live, like, you know, 40 more years and die at the age of 90, and then when he dies, he's going to go back 40 years, like, to the day that he got the power to, you know?
Only if he doesn't get a blood transfusion.
You're right. Yeah, that's it. So I just was interested in that possibility of, like, you know, is he gonna live the rest of his life, die, and then go back and relive it again? I mean, that's kind of an interesting...
Yeah, I'm totally for movies that just stand alone and don't have multiple sequels, and so I'm not saying I want this, but they could do something more with this power that he has, possibly. I don't, but...
That's another thing. I hope this is a standalone movie. Like, yeah. I really enjoy it a lot, and I'll probably watch it multiple times and buy it on Blu-ray or whatever.
And every time you watch it, you'll get better at watching it.
I get better at watching it, and then, yeah. I'll just muscle memory. I'll know exactly when things are going to happen. I'll be in a time loop. But, you know, I hope they don't... A sequel would need a lot of good writing. I mean, it would need... You'd have to really dig something up.
I mean, yeah. Might not even have Tom Cruise in it.
Right. I just want to say, we have not talked about Emily Blunt enough on this podcast.
Well, we're getting to our favorite moments.
Okay.
So you can talk about that. Okay, so shifting to our favorite moments from the film, Matt, what did it for you?
Yeah, I've got two things that kind of stick out right away. You know, I did tend to like, because there was so much action and seriousness in the movie, I did tend to like the little moments of humor that were around. And so... I don't know if I was the only one that loved this part, but the very first time that Tom Cruise is doing push-ups and then rolls under the truck, or that's his idea, and then he gets run over, and then he kind of gives out this little, ah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was probably my biggest laugh-out-loud moment throughout. Like, I just couldn't stop laughing about that sound that he made. So I love that, but then also just the training sequence that that he had where she was trying to make him better, and she keep on, you know, it sounds morbid, but, you know, she keep on killing him, and it was kind of humorous. And then I like the scene at the house where she's starting to realize, oh my gosh, how many days have we lived this already? Like, you're giving me coffee with how many, 3 sugars or something?
Yeah. Yeah.
And then I was a little bit like, why is she so stubborn and still going to the helicopter, even though he's telling her she's going to die? But I think it might be a good character moment where it just shows she's not willing to take no for an answer. She'll do everything she can to try to also save the day, even if she knows for a fact it's not going to work out. So, yeah, I mean, it was a little frustrating that she wouldn't listen to him, but I could see how that really helps define who she is as a character.
Yeah, well, I think she said it to him after all her bitterness and stuff, because she says, why does it matter what happens to me? And I think she's trying to show him that, you know? Yeah.
I did forget to mention one thing. I'm not sure this is a come-on moment, but I just want to run it by you guys. So when she kisses him at the end, you know, she's barely known this guy. To him, I think he's in love with her at this point. Did you guys feel like that fit the tone at that point, or was that out of nowhere? Was that for the audience?
At first, I thought it was for the audience, and because I know, like, we're going back to, like, she didn't know anything else but the beginning of the day, but I think that based on some of the things that he says to her and the way that he treats her, she's already had this experience that we're kind of led into where she understands like what it's like. And he, you know, he obviously is paying attention. It can be endearing. I don't necessarily, if that would have become a relationship, they would have lived. They'd be like, hey, yes, yeah. I love you because of the day we've had together.
Yeah.
Then that would have been, but I think she understands like that he's got this passion and she's almost rewarding the passion. Not necessarily the audience. The audience, obviously, I think enjoyed it,
history,
but
yeah.
I'm glad that it didn't. They didn't kiss like every day, like
I think
over
she,
and over
I
and
think
over
she,
again.
You know, it's kind of it's not unexplained, but it's not really at the forefront of your mind in that moment. But she understands the gravity of what he's going through in that power because she had it. You know, she no longer has it, but when she did, she saw her person that she loved die 200 times or whatever. So she understands the gravity of what he's seen. I think that lent itself to her automatically being endeared to him because of what he's explaining to her and the things that he knows. And so, I think it fit.
Could have been worse.
Yeah, it could have been worse.
Could have been way worse.
Yeah. I think my favorite moment, I mean, I love the humor in this movie. I really do. I like when you have quick, witty humor in a quick, fast-paced action movie. I think my favorite... And I think of it in terms of, like, action scene where I was like, nah, that was cool. was when he, when they got in the van and the trailer was still attached and the alien pops out and he has to like shoot that alien to pieces and like pulls it, you know, gets up over the top and like, you know, pulls out the turret guns and just blasts it to bits and it like the trailer eventually just shakes off. That was really cool, and I think it was capped off perfectly by then. He's just like sitting back down in the van and the van's like, you know, just half destroyed and they're just like, okay, we're moving on now.
And moving on.
Yeah. That was such a cool action moment.
Well, and it's a pretty good juxtaposition of the character that we saw at the beginning of the movie.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
You know,
yeah.
Like, he's obviously not, he's like, I've seen this so many times.
Yeah.
I'm used to
this. I know exactly what's going to happen. Yeah. Yep. I'm not scared. I'm prepared. Let's do it.
Well, I would say that my favorite thing wasn't necessarily a scene, but it was an idea. And I linked an article from Thinking Faith, and he put it so well. I'm just going to read what he said. Because he says, but the main triumph of the film is that it conveys the fact of the tedium without the feeling. So during the film, I felt how hard it was for Bill Cage to go through every day.
Mm-hmm.
But I was never bored
yeah.
watching him go through it. And I think when you make a movie that's like this, that has this kind of sci-fi thing, it's real easy to do, like, show too much every day. And then the audience gets bored.
Mm-hmm.
And so they feel Tom Cruise's boredom because they're bored.
Yeah.
But at no point was I bored. But I felt, like, the range. I felt like the hope, the encouragement, then, like, the losing of hope, the mm-hmm. despair. Like, going the one scene where he basically just gives up and is like, I'm not going to war.
Yeah.
I'm just going to sit here in London.
And drink.
And then, yeah, and drink. And then yeah. sees what happens to London. Like it takes me through that and it keeps it changing and they show just enough every time. And like I said, I think Mark, you said this towards the beginning, they actually have these scenes where you think we're watching him do this for the first time
mm-hmm.
only to show us that he's already done this,
yeah.
you know, an untold number of times.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, so I just thought the way the director, I guess the screenwriters, whoever ended up being on it, whoever made these final decisions on how to tell the story, it really kept me involved with the story and showed me how boring something was. Like in Groundhog Day, I never really felt like,
yeah.
like even though Bill Murray, like there's these scenes in Groundhog Day where he's killing himself
mm-hmm.
like over and over and over again, all mm-hmm. these different ways.
Yeah.
I never really felt the tedium of what could be considered the curse of living the same day over and over
uh-huh.
again. And this one, like, you know, I felt like the hopelessness.
Yeah. And I think the cool thing about this kind of setup of a movie of being repeating things over and over is if you have a really good shot, you get to see that shot multiple times. And my favorite shot of the whole movie was Rita coming out of her crashed ship, and you see her from behind, and she gets out of that crashed ship to go to the beach and mm-hmm. the battle, and she's dragging that sword, and you just kind of get this gravity of like who she is. I loved that scene. I love shots like that in films, and you got to see that like 20 times. It's great.
You get to see her use her Final Fantasy VII sword
yeah,
over and over again.
Yeah, it was so she was just like, she was super cool. I mean, she really kicked a lot of butt in this movie, and she, I thought she was perfectly cast. I thought she was just on point.
Well, I'd want to see her in more action movies now.
I feel like
there's not a whole lot of females that can do action and mm-hmm. make action believable.
Yeah.
So, I thought
she
had.
Go ahead.
No, I was just gonna say I thought she had a good demeanor for it. So, go ahead, Matt.
Yeah. Have you guys seen Adjustment Bureau?
Yes.
Yes.
Oh man, that's one of my favorite movies, and she's
really
awesome too.
Yes, I love that movie.
I love that.
Because I really love I love sci-fi, but I love sci-fi that takes on like another specific genre. Mm-hmm. And most sci-fi is like sci-fi and action. But like sci-fi and romance is a really good combination because my favorite movie is Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind.
Oh, yeah, that's another great one.
It is literally my favorite movie. I will pick it every day. That's why I love The Adjustment Bureau so much, because it was just this cool sci-fi element that had this, you know, destiny and fate and love. Mm-hmm. And so that did it really well. I liked the movie a lot.
Yeah.
Hey, I wanted to ask you, just mentioned the bar scene where, you know, he decides to skip out on the actual war. So he gets tracked down, though, by the aliens, right? Don't the mimics come and find him and kill him? Or is that just a coincidence that they find him and kill him?
No, they just destroy London over and over again.
Okay, because I thought there was a thing where, you know, that doctor that was working with Rita, who we barely got to know but was kind of interesting?
Mm-hmm.
I forgot his name. I thought he had said that the mimics could track down people that had the blood inside them. So like Rita previously, and now Bill.
Yeah.
The same. Well, I thought
So it seems like they were trying to track him down and kill him. But then at the same time, there was that scene where they wanted to drain out his blood so that he couldn't redo the day over. So did I misunderstand that, or did they have that power to track down the people that could reset the day?
I felt like the Omega could find him. And so the Omega was luring him there. I thought that's what they meant by, like, they could... Because I didn't really think they could track him.
Okay. Well, they're obviously trapping him.
They could trap him, but not track him.
Well, I thought they were kind of, like, figuring out what he was going to do and kind of... But the London thing was he accidentally discovered that while they were going to the battle... Because we had not been in London until that point, he accidentally discovered that they're also attacking London.
Okay, I see.
So
they just went right across the channel. So as soon as they run right over him on the beach, they're just going to cross the channel real quick,
right,
and then destroy London.
Right. So I think that was he discovered more of their plan accidentally. But yeah, they do kind of obviously the fake out with it being in the dam and him going there and then not being there. So
Hey, one last quick question. I'm just curious on your thoughts on this. So. The trailer kind of gives away, well, it does give away the fact that Rita knows something, and we don't know exactly how, but, I feel like the trailer basically said that Rita had a similar experience, and so that's why she tells Bill, come see me when you wake up. So, do you guys, I kind of wish that they hadn't shown that in the trailer. Did you feel like the trailer gave away too much, or was it enough to pique your interest?
I didn't think it gave away too much.
Oh, I think all trailers now give away too much.
They do.
Yeah. Once I know I'm going to go see a movie, I try to stop. Like, I'm trying my hardest not to watch anything else from Guardians of the Galaxy.
Me too.
I already know I want to see it. Yeah. I don't want to see anymore. It was the same thing for Captain America. Same thing for, even Spider-Man. I knew I was going to go see it. I don't want to see any more about the movie. Edge of Tomorrow, I watched the first trailer. I was like, this is going to be probably cool. I'm going to go see it. I don't need to see more trailers. Mm-hmm. And actually, one of my favorite YouTube series, Glove and Boots, actually just did a cartoon about this. About, like, stop giving away the entire plot of the movie in the movie trailer.
Yeah.
And they go back and do, I think, Empire Strikes Back and make, like, a modern movie trailer for it. And it basically talks through everything in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
In this specific case, I didn't need to know that to be interested, so I could have done without it. It didn't ruin it for me because it's such an original property.
Yeah.
That I didn't exactly know
what
was going on. But,
I think trailers give away a lot, and comparatively, this didn't give away as much as like a lot of the trailers that I've seen. And I didn't think it gave away enough to tell me what the plot was and how everything was going to work. I kind of had the basic premise, but I didn't think the trailer gave away too much. I mean, naturally, they give away more than you really need for me, but like it's easy to get caught up in like see these 7 clips from the movie, and you're like and I've noticed that like I'll watch like the Tonight Show or something, they'll show a clip on there, and you'll see this like action sequence. Like I saw a clip of Captain America before the Winter Soldier came out, and it was like this when they go on the ship and they start the beginning action sequence of the movie. They cut it down, so you're seeing even a watered down version of what's actually in the movie. It's much longer in the movie. It's much more drawn out, and it cheapens it a little bit. But I didn't think Edge of Tomorrow did that necessarily.
Actually, one of the funniest things is it's always interesting to me when I watch a trailer and that stuff's not in the movie.
Yeah,
because the quote from Spider-Man 2 that I go around saying all the time now is, well, isn't that the question of the day?
Yeah.
And it wasn't in the movie.
It wasn't in the movie at all.
Because the whole scene in Amazing Spider-Man, or the whole scene in the trailer for Amazing Spider-Man 2, where he's like, this is Oscorp's surveillance of you, Peter Parker. And he's like, whoa, the hell is that?
Yeah.
And he's like, isn't that the question of the day?
Not in it at all.
Not in the movie at all.
Well, and I was disappointed with X-Men because there's that great first trailer of X-Men where Patrick Stewart says, we need you to hope again.
Movie?
And then the movie, he said it like, we need you to hope again. And I was like, oh, what happened? But I was so good in the trailer.
Yeah.
And he was just like, we need you to hope again. I'm like, aw.
I don't know what's wrong with the Amazing Spider-Man movies. This is the second movie in a row where they had an extended...
They suck.
The trailer has a very specific scene that seems important, and then it doesn't even appear in the movie.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Because well, I think the writing and the editing and the directing, they kind of don't know what they're doing.
Well, it might be because there are certain scenes from movies that you can't take and put in the trailer without thinking you're actually spoiling the movie. Mm-hmm. So I can imagine there's either deleted scenes or they write dialogue over existing scenes so they can actually put in a trailer to convey to an audience what the movie is about. Given, even with that,
because
I think this happened actually with Iron Man.
Uh-huh.
I think Iron Man's trailer looks a little bit different. Like, when you go on IMDb and you look up the quotes for lots of movies, you'll see, like, quote, from trailer.
From trailer.
And it's, like, not actually in the movie.
Yeah.
But I still think they give away too much.
If you're a Spider-Man fan, or if you're going to go see a Spider-Man movie, a lot of people just go see Spider-Man because, oh, it's a Spider-Man movie. It's flashy. I mean, and a lot of that movie is just, like, super visual. And same thing with, like, Edge of Tomorrow. The visuals are great. I mean, why do you need to show the whole story? I mean, people are going to go see it anyway.
Well, that's the thing.
They're not going to see it because, like, Peter Parker has this big change and blah, blah, blah. They're going to see Electro blow stuff up.
But in this case, are people going to see it? Because, like, this movie, all three of us agree, it was great. And
right, it's tomorrow.
Made, like, $30 million.
Yeah, I know.
You know, it got beat out by Fault in Our Stars. And it's going to go up against two new movies this week.
Yeah.
You know, so...
That's the thing. Like, people are going to go see 22 Jump Street without...
But it's a sequel.
Knowing that, but I mean, that's the same. That's what I'm saying about Spider-Man. I mean, you're gonna go see Spider-Man because you like Spider-Man, and I think people stopped going to see it and didn't see it multiple times because it was a bad movie. And this one, I'm hoping this one has kind of a lengthy stay at the top five because we need more movies like this.
Yeah, word of mouth. Well, that was gonna take me to my final thought. But Matt wanted to say something.
I was going to say, I don't know if you keep track of the Rotten Tomatoes ratings, but I think this is one of the cases where us as fans agree with the critics. And so Rotten Tomatoes is right now at 89%. And the only two movies that are higher than that have come out in the pretty recent history here when it comes to the type of movies we would see and enjoy, it would be X-Men Days of Future Past got 91%, and so did How to Train Your Dragon Part 2, 91%. But I mean, 89% on Rotten Tomatoes, that's awesome. So
that's great. Yeah.
Edge of Tomorrow is doing really well.
Yep.
Yeah. And like I said, so hopefully people will go see it. So like I said, my final thought, there was one thing we didn't talk about that I really liked, and it was just the fact that the journey, how long it truly takes to go in a character arc from caring only about yourself to being able to care about someone else. And just that tendency that people have to like I don't personally know Nicolas Cage, but I hate Nicolas Cage, but maybe if I hung out with Nicolas Cage and I had to go through the same day with him, like, you know, 365 times, maybe
You'd invent new ways to kill yourself.
Maybe I would invent new ways to kill myself. But, you know, so like I love the fact that it's this movie. When I sat down to write the show notes for it, I had one or two things I wanted to really talk about. And then after really thinking about the movie and going back and making more and more notes, I realize that this is another really great movie. Most people think that summer blockbusters are mindless, it's just action, no substance. I think we've already proved by, you know, been talking for as long as we have that this movie has tons of things to make you talk about. I would really highly recommend everyone go see it. If we want more original stuff, we have to pay to see original stuff when it comes out.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, absolutely. And that's why I really hope we get more sci-fi action movies like this. Mm-hmm. At least attempts at them, because I'm glad that we had an attempt at Elysium, but that was a terrible movie. So maybe let Doug Liman direct the next movie that's like this and not Neil Blomkamp.
So,
Doug Liman does have a list of movies that I actually really like. I mean, he's got a lot of well-known movies. I won't name them all, but this one would now be on my top three movies that he has produced. So Bourne Identity, probably my top one. He did that in 2002. And then he also directed Mr. and Mrs. Smith, which I don't know how everybody feels about that, but I actually love that movie. So,
I love that movie. It's so much fun.
That came out in 2005, so those are a while back, but I'd say Edge of Tomorrow is right up there. So Edge of Tomorrow has now entered my top three Doug Liman movies, and that's pretty big.
There we go.
So the final thoughts, Matt?
Yeah, I'd say, if somebody's listening at this point, they've already seen it, hopefully. So I definitely would recommend this movie. Like you were saying, tons of good things that you can pull out of it to talk about, and overall just a real fun ride.
Cool.
Yeah, I mean, there's that, we're looking at like trying to project what episodes we're gonna do of the podcast throughout like June and July. There's really not, other than How to Train Your Dragon 2, there's really not a whole lot this month and kind of getting into July. Go see this movie if you have a lull. I mean, this is the movie to go see.
Tell your friends.
tell your friends. I mean, it's just such a, it's everything you want in a summer blockbuster. We can't really say that enough. Go see it again, because man, we need more movies like this.
Cool. Well, like I said, we are running pretty long. So, Matt, I thank you so much for being here.
Yeah, tell, thanks for having me on.
Tell people who have loved hearing that, what do we call it at the beginning of the thing? Like a dark and deep and awesome. I don't remember what we said. Tell people how they can hear that voice.
Yes. You can find me at thescifichristian.com. My podcast is called The Sci-Fi Christian.
Nice.
Are you on Twitter?
Yeah, we're on Twitter, Sci-Fi Christian, and on Facebook, The Sci-Fi Christian. So, yeah, find us all at all of those themed places.
So, the side question is, are you personally on Twitter?
I am, yes. And,
I couldn't find you.
I'm glad you brought this up, because I got on Twitter pretty early on, I think. And so, I didn't really know, right now a lot of times you sign up for usernames for different things. And so, I kind of have a username I always use. Which is also my Gmail, but I really want a new handle, so I think I need to throw this out to my audience to help me come up with a new handle that's good. But yeah, so right now I'm M Anderson 555. So at M Anderson 555. Yeah, I think
sketchy. I
need something a little bit cooler. What do you guys have for your Twitters?
Well, I have a difficult last name, so everybody kind of messes up my last name. Or historically, they have. So I did a funny version of it. So I'm Mark Wingdinger. That's my Twitter handle. But I'm actually Wingerter is my last name. So just a funny, easier way to do my name is Wingdinger. So Mark Wingdinger on Twitter, and then you know I can for finding me, obviously on I'm on this podcast a lot, but I'm also on Real World Theology, writing a lot of stuff. So we can
a ton of things.
Just ton of things, you know. Fizz just doesn't even know it.
That's right. And as far as Twitter handles go, like I said, most people who know me in person, it's kind of a weird nickname to try to get people to talk, if you talk to them the first time, but most people call me Fizz because my last name is Fissile.
Yeah.
And so my Twitter handle is Fizzification.
Oh, very nice.
So because the hammer was already taken.
Oh, that makes sense. I wish that I had a more unique name, because Matthew Anderson, not a lot you can do with that. And so yeah, I gotta come up with a better.
You just do Manderson. I'm Anderson.
Well, no, I tried that. I tried, basically what happened is everything was taken, so I was like M Anderson, nope. M Anderson 5, which is my favorite number, nope. M Anderson 55, nope, taken. All right, fine. M Anderson 55.
55.
So no.
Five. I want a five in there. 555.
So one of my 2014 goals, new Twitter handle. So watch for that sometime this year.
Oh, okay. Awesome. So we know how to get a hold of you, Matt. We know how to get a hold of you, Mark.
Yep.
If you want to keep this discussion going, please follow also not only Fizzification, but at Real World Theo on Twitter. If you'd like to know more about Real World Theology, visit our website, realworldtheology.com, which you probably already have if you're downloading this episode. Connect with us on Facebook and subscribe to the podcast on iTunes or Stitcher and Stitcher. I don't care how many times you connect with us. And if you enjoy it, review the show, leave us some feedback, tell your friends, and let's get more people involved in the conversation. On that note, I do want to send a big thank you to SethG24 for giving us a 5-star review on iTunes this week. I'm assuming it's a he. If it's not, I apologize, SethG, but said some very, very, very nice things about the show, so I appreciate that. And so to round us out, again, I just want to thank Mark for being here, Matt for being here for the first time. You did awesome, and I can't wait to trick you into coming back.
Yeah, enjoy talking with you.
Oh, I definitely want to come back on.
So thank you guys. Thanks listeners, for taking the time to make us part of your week. And until next episode, remember that story is powerful and entertainment is not mindless. Bye-bye.
It is not. Later.